This is London. This is London.
The Voice of Russia World Service.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
This is the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland, with a relay transmission via Bel-Air in the Netherlands Antilles, directed to New Zealand.
This is Radio Prague, Czechoslovakia.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
Bonjour à vous si vous nous rejoignez sur Radio France Internationale. Il est 5h à Paris.
This is Radio Ukraine International.
This is the English program of Radio Deutsche Welle, Germany's international broadcasting service.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Keith Perron.
Well, hello everyone and welcome again to another edition of the program. We begin in Papua New Guinea. PNG's media industry has been shaken by the death of a journalist who had suffered in a violent relationship. The Post Courier's newspaper business editor died last week in unexplained circumstances. Her death has reignited the debate about PNG's ongoing epidemic of violence against women. Dominic Godfrey reports.
The newspaper's duty of care to its employees has been called into question after Roslyn Albanian Ivara died in hospital this month. Photos displayed during her funeral showed clear signs that she'd been injured recently. Ms. Ivara's former boss, Alexander Rini, says the newspaper did not do enough to protect the journalist.
For me to see those pictures on Monday, the funeral service was shocking. And I was so angry because it was obvious to me that nothing was done by colleagues who were living around here, but also by the company to identify that one of their senior staff was facing problems.
Our correspondent in Port Moresby, Melvin Livongo, says Ms. Ivara lived with her husband in the Post Courier's flats, neighbouring other journalists. He says the police were contacted only after the severe bruising on her body was discovered during the funeral. A former colleague, Priscilla Maigu, says Ms. Ivara had complained of body aches and bruises a week before her death.
She confided in me and left most of the valuable information with regards to her injuries and violence. Continuous violence against her life. This thing must not go hidden and be buried with her.
Ms. Ivara's burial was postponed after a court order was obtained to establish the cause of death. An autopsy was then conducted and preliminary findings are expected to be released within days. In a statement, PNG's Prime Minister Peter O'Neill called for men to stand up and prevent domestic violence.
A man is a coward if he thinks it's okay to hit a woman. These abusers would not have the courage to hit a man who is bigger than they are, but they hit a woman who is smaller.
Mr. O'Neill also called on churches to take the lead in protecting victims and exposing violent men. The Post Courier's editor, Todagia Kilola, says reviewing laws regarding gender-based violence would help.
Maybe there should be something that automatically stops the violent aspect from taking airbag. In many cases, it's the survivors who go back again because of so many factors.
He says while his staff had called the police and intervened on behalf of Ms. Ivara, the current law leaves the onus on the victim to lay a formal complaint. The Port Moresby police have confirmed that there is an investigation underway into Ms. Ivara's death. I'm Dominic Godfrey.
The death of the prominent journalist in PNG has prompted criticism of the newspaper she worked for. Photographs displayed at her funeral showed what appeared to be recent and severe injuries. A police investigation is underway and a post-mortem result is pending from the death, which is now being treated as suspicious. The paper's editor, Togogia Keola, told Dominic Godfrey that the criticisms melted out. His newspaper is unfair and unwarranted.
There is some violence in a home. But when she comes to the office, she just doesn't tell us, nor does she bring a problem. What I know from her background is she was brought up in a very disciplined family where she's been taught to solve her own problem. That's why she doesn't want to bother others with their personal problems. She comes to work, gives 100%, and then she goes home.
But given that she was living in a compound, you know, surrounded by neighbours who are other colleagues from the Post Courier. There are these allegations that the quarrels that were happening within the apartment, purportedly with the husband, that these were violent and audible within the neighbourhood, and that they should have been heard by her colleagues and therefore should have been reported?
My staff have done as much as they can. Now, those who are complaining, they also knew that issue. Our former editor, he was the editor at that time. There were instances when the late business editor runs away from a home to other staff and complaints are laid. He is aware of it. Now, there was instances where staff take Roslyn to the police station. One time she was taken by one of my staff, Gorothy Kenner, taken to a safe house. But then when she went home, she found out that Roslyn was back at the house. And when she asked Roslyn, Roslyn told her that no, I had to call my husband to come because I spoke with him on the phone and things are back to normal. So she goes back again. I can honestly tell you that there were instances when police go into the compound, reported by our staff, but the survivor herself, her dad has clearly highlighted certain things, maybe the GBV law should be looked at, because it's the survivors who are going back, who are not really speaking out.
So as editor-in-chief, as Roslyn's boss, as a friend and colleague, you feel your conscience is clear and that you have done the best by her to have ensured that, to the best of your knowledge?
My conscience is very clear. Now, I'm pretty certain that what our former editor stated, he was aware of that situation. He was aware of instances when staff at our compound, when Roslyn went to seek assistance, they took her to the police station, there were complaints laid. He is fully aware that it was Roslyn who goes back again.
When I spoke to Alex Reaney a few days ago, he mentioned that there were three women he knew of who are current employees of the Post Courier who are also living in violent relationships. What different things do you think the paper can do to help these women?
Look, the death of Roslyn has just now highlighted something, and that's for us to fully put our brains together to come up with a campaign. Is go to that GBV Act, have a look at it. Maybe there should be something that should automatically stop the violent husband from taking her back. In many cases, it's the survivors who go back again because of so many factors.
And Peter O'Neill has come out very firmly, very strongly against these men that commit these crimes against partners, their wives and so on. Perhaps it is a time for him to champion looking at the GBV Act.
That's definitely what the Post Courier will be doing. I've met with my management and I've told them this is where we should look at. Roslyn has highlighted a very, very important issue.
If you're a regular listener to the program, you may know that some time ago we were reporting on the, well, how would I say, the tension between the Tongan leadership and the Tonga Broadcasting Commission. Well, this, of course, is still ongoing. Now, 2 weeks out of Tonga's elections, there is a worry that the public access to information and discussion is at a premium. The caretaker government has a tense relationship with the media, in particular the state-owned Tonga Broadcasting Commission. Koro Vakawatu reports on how the election coverage has been impacted.
The former head of the TBC says the end of a talkback show means people are missing out on opportunities to discuss issues leading up to the November 16 election. The country's largest broadcaster and Prime Minister Pohiva have had some angry exchanges this year, highlighted by the PM calling the broadcaster an enemy of government. Shortly after that comment, Nanese Fifita was sacked as general manager on a technicality. And last month, two of the TBC's most senior journalists were moved out of the newsroom into sales. And public programming has been cut. Revenue losses and unpopular content are the reasons given for the changes. But Ms. Fifita says the media should be providing a platform for healthy discussion as well as educating and informing.
Seeing what is happening now, the two most experienced reporters, Romano and Viola, have been moved to a non-news section. And I have asked, why do you have to drop that very popular live radio talkback program? That's very sad. We need healthy discussion through the media.
The chair of the press council, Pesi Funua, agrees the changes have impacted election coverage.
The handling of news coverage on the station is kind of different. And secondly to that, you're not really sure now about how they're handling candidates who are trying to broadcast their campaigning from the station itself. And one of the other FM stations, which is popular, the owner of that is also running for the election. So there's a little bit of a strange feeling going on. So with regard to the media and broadcasting, I think it's relatively quieter than normal.
While he does notice differences in coverage, Mr. Funua says the candidates seem to be getting their message across in other ways.
I think what's taken over from the radios, there's been a lot of parade, you know, all these candidates driving around in the vehicles with a whole group, and more than usual. I think so. I think they're taking all from the radio station.
Kalafi Moala runs the Taimi Media Network and believes the current campaign is unique.
Many of the candidates are canvassing house to house, approaching people directly. One thing that I have noticed, which is a major difference with this election compared with previous elections. Previous elections, people were talking about issues that are national. In this election, people are focusing in on their constituency, on their districts.
Both Pesi Funua and Kalafi Moala say smaller private media is operating as usual, although Mr. Moala acknowledges the media has become more partisan.
There has been definitely a division in media, which is not something new. It's something that has been building up over the years, where media has become partisan in the sense that there are those media that are supportive of certain parties and certain grouping of politicians, and then those that are opposed to it at the same time.
Mr. Moala says in the past the TBC was the only media viewed as neutral by the public. It remains to be seen whether that neutrality will be impacted by the recent changes. This is Korovaka Uta.
And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Category 105, it is fitted to total journals.
Speed 220, Category 105.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
Well, I do want to respond, actually, to a very interesting question that we had from a couple of people that wrote us asking about shortwave radios. Where to buy them? Is the market very big? Well, the market is, how would I put it in a very diplomatic way? It's a very niche market. Now, there are some people out there that might say, well, there are so many retailers selling shortwave radios. And while that may be true, to some degree, you need to look at how many radios they are shifting. Now, we could go into this in nauseating detail, but we will use one example for the retail locations of where shortwave radios are sold. And that is going to be Singapore. Now, Singapore, of course, never really had a big shortwave audience to begin with, even 30, 40 years ago. But Singapore is centrally located as a major international hub, especially for the airline industry. Changi Airport's main business is, it's an airport where airplanes stop, where you change planes and move on to somewhere else. 7 years ago, if you were flying through Changi Airport in the duty-free section where they sell all kinds of electronics, Sanjin actually had a display, and they were selling about five or even at the most six different models of Sanjin shortwave receivers. Well, in the past few years, this display area where the Sanjin shortwave receivers were has gone. It's actually no more. There are no more shortwave receivers that you can buy at the Changi Airport. There are some radios that they do sell, which may have the shortwave bands, but there's a sort of El Cheapo, not exactly for shortwave listening. Now, there are two big department stores in Singapore. But not I call them department stores. They're more plazas. One of them is called Digital Plaza. And Digital Plaza, which is located in central Singapore, is an area that if you want to buy any type of electronics, is a place to go. Back in the 1990s, when I first started going to Singapore, there were at least 3 to 4 different retailers in Digital Plaza, the old location, that would actually have shortwave receivers. This has actually changed. There's actually one left, and he has one model. Now, the owner I've known for quite some time, and the last time I was there, I asked him the question. I said, well, how many of these receivers do you move? And he said, well, in 2 years, we've sold 2. And I asked him, do you keep these in stock? He said, no, what we have in the window right now on display is actually the only one, because they were given to them at a very discounted price. So they really don't take up that too much stock room space, which is very limited. He gave a couple away, and there's one sitting in the window. And the one that has been sitting in the window has been sitting there for as long as I have been going to his shop. It has not moved at all. In fact, he's actually even selling it under the suggested retail price just to get rid of the damn thing. Now, there is another plaza in Singapore known as Mustafa Plaza. I'm sure that some of our Indian listeners who've flown through Singapore might know Mustafa Plaza. It is a store that was opened up in the 1970s by a chap by the name, well, Mustafa. And it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it's a huge complex, and anything you can imagine, they sell. They also have some shortwave radios. Well, I rephrase that. They still have one shortwave radio, a Sony, in one of the stalls, which has also been there for many, many years, also being sold under the retail value, which they haven't been able to move. The manager of that little stall told me that in the 1980s, probably until 1995, 1996, they would sell maybe 10 a month. This has dropped down to 0. He said they hadn't sold any at his stall, which is the only one that has it now, for maybe 3 years. And he still has some stock, which he cannot send back to the distributor, so he keeps lowering the price. Hopefully somebody one day will come along and take them. Now, this is pretty much the trend that you see in many retail locations, not just in Singapore, but also around the world. In the last number of years, the number one spot where people go to buy shortwave radios, of course, is online. Now, many of these online retailers either sell what is called new old stock, so stock perhaps that was sitting in a warehouse for a very long time that they got access to at a very low cost, and then sell them online, or they are receivers, let's say, by, as example, Texan, who will occasionally release a new receiver, which in fact is not new because the receivers are receivers that they're holding back on and just waiting for time to release them. The question, though, is at one time there were retailers that actually made businesses and actually survived from selling shortwave radios. Today, that isn't the case. Now, I'm not saying that shortwave isn't important. Yes, there are some regions of the world where shortwave radio does play a vital role. One example would be the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, or otherwise known as North Korea. Just recently, the BBC World Service started for the first time ever a Korean service to broadcast to people in that country. So yes, shortwave radio does have a purpose for some regions. But this actually is a bigger picture. It's a bigger picture than just shortwave. Even radio itself. There was recently a video that the BBC had prepared for the anniversary of Radio 1, where they were going up to people under the age of 30, asking them to find Radio 1 on the dial. Surprisingly, a number of people actually couldn't even turn the radio on or didn't even listen. Now, listening habits have changed, and people will say, well, this is only in the developing world, in the developed world. No, it's also in the developing world. A number of years ago, on my first trip to Kenya, it was actually quite easy to see people by roadsides in front of their homes listening to radio, either domestic or international. On my last trip to Nairobi, Kenya, and to the surrounding areas outside the capital, you still saw it, but very few and far between. Most people had very low-cost Chinese-made mobile phones, for example, like companies like Huawei or Xiaomi, listening online. Now, then some people might say, well, this is expensive and most people can't afford it. Well, prices have come down dramatically. A good example of how prices have come down is Myanmar or Burma. The first time I went to Burma, just for the data package, was over $300, and it was limited data. And I had to buy a phone locally, which cost $1,000. Well, that has changed completely. A data package now in Myanmar can range from $10 to $20, and you can buy a cheap Chinese-made mobile phone like Huawei or Xiaomi that I just mentioned a moment ago for between, well, the prices started around $30 all the way to $70. So prices have dropped dramatically. In fact, the BBC World Service has said that the vast majority of its audience that listen in Burma now listen via mobile phone. So there is this stage that we have seen with radio listening. When the internet started getting sufficiently fast enough, people stopped listening to shortwave and start listening via their computers. In developing countries, well, it kind of skipped over the computer aspect of it, because they're using fixed lines, which are very often inferior to modern G4 communications that you're seeing being set up in many places, and going right to mobile phones. So listening habits have changed. Now, as for listening to shortwave itself, to be honest with you, I have not turned any of my shortwave receivers on in about 3 years. Even when I travel now, there was a time when I did travel, and I would always bring a shortwave receiver with me, especially if I was going off to a place like, say, Burma. But in the last 3 years, I haven't. I have actually had no need to, because I can still get everything from, well, from either my laptop or my mobile phone itself. Then we get into the romanticism of the legacy of the technology. Well, very often I will use the comment, if somebody writes something like, oh, but it's magical to listen to, and shortwave is still a modern and new form that we just cannot get rid of. Well, technologies change. Would you go and buy a black and white television with a dial? No, you wouldn't. Would you buy a gramophone? No, you wouldn't. Shortwave radio has actually gone in that direction, and that's just the way it is. If you look at the vast majority of shortwave clubs now around the world that at one time maybe had hundreds of listeners, many of these clubs now have dwindled to sometimes less than 30, even less than 10. And the generation is interesting because it's usually people over the age of maybe 50 or sometimes even older than that. If they wanted to get people interested, let's say, in shortwave itself, they would have done something to make it more appealing for younger people, but they just haven't done that. Anyway, that was just in reply to some questions that came in on that topic. I want to know actually how you feel on that. You can send us an email, mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. Well, it's now time to find out what's happening with propagation, what we can expect over the next 7 days. Here's Glenn Hauser.
Keith from Space Weather Services Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through November 4th. Normal at all latitudes. From Space Weather South Africa through November 4th, magnetic conditions active to unsettled, to quiet to unsettled. Shortwave fadeouts unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK through November 5th, solar activity expected to remain at low or very low levels. Geomagnetic activity quiet, occasionally unsettled. From FK Yonda of the Czech Propagation Interest Group, the geomagnetic field will be mostly quiet on November 3rd, 5th, 15th to 17th, and 19th. Quiet on November 4th, 6th, 12th, and 13th. Quiet to active on November 7th, 11th, 14th, and 22nd. Active to disturbed on November 8th, 9th, 10th, and 21st. Quiet to unsettled on November 18th and 20th. From the Space Environment Prediction Center, China, planetary A index between 30 and 23 from November 7th to 11th, as low as 4 on November 19th, but then up to 19 on November 21st. Solar flux predictions now more in line with Boulder. China sees a peak of 76 on November 9th and 10th, no higher than 79 on November 19th to 26th. From the Space Weather Prediction Center, Colorado, solar flux down to 70 November 4th to 14th, and up to 75 by November 19th. The geomagnetic field is expected to be unsettled to active with G1 minor storm levels likely on November 7th to 11th, 20th to 22nd, and G2 moderate levels November 9th, with ANK indices peaking at 40 and 6. Lowest A's and K's of 5 and 2 or 8 and 3 on November 5th, 6th, 12th to 14th, 17th to 19th, and 23rd to 25th.
All right, thanks a lot, Glenn. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of the program. Once again, I want your comments known on what I was just talking about a moment ago, mnp@pcjmedia.com. Anyway, that's all we have time for, 73 and 88 to the ladies.